Hello and welcome to the podcast that was formerly known as Reading the Library Book and currently known as Leandra's Lost Library. I think we're going to stay here with this name, with Leandra's Lost Library, which is also the name of the book. So the book has changed its name from the library book to Leandra's Lost Library. And so the podcast has changed its name from Reading the Library Book to Leandra's Lost Library. So if you have thoughts about titles, please, of course, as ever, do let me know. And you may be wondering what I'm doing back here. If you've already listened to the whole book, you may be surprised that there's more. And it's not a sequel. Not yet, anyway. But what this is a reimagining of chapter one. So most of this chapter is going to be the same as before. It's just the beginning bit that I have shifted a little bit. If you've never listened to the book before, you can start here. This starts off the whole book kind of all over again. If you have listened to chapter one before, it might be interesting to compare this one to the previous one. Or listen to this one and see if you can remember what the other one was like and how they might be different. I don't know. Up to you. But this is an alternate chapter one, an updated chapter one, starting from the beginning. And now this chapter has a title, thanks to all of you, my listeners, who convinced me that I definitely needed to title the chapters. So this chapter now has a title. And it is called The Library After School. Chapter 1, The Library After School. And the librarian set the globe spinning, watching the world's lands and waters blend together as it rotated. She closed her eyes and sent her finger forward. She wasn't sure what was going to happen when her finger stopped somewhere in the world, but she was pretty sure something would. She felt the globe stop and opened her eyes. Her finger was on the coast of Madagascar. She smelled chocolate and looked up. There she saw... "Leandra!" said a voice from somewhere far away. "Leandra!" I looked up from my book to see my teacher, Ms. Nima, pointing at the clock. It took me a moment to realize what the numbers meant. School was out. Time to leave. All the other kids in my class had already left. How had I missed that? "Good book, Leandra?" asked Ms. Nima. I nodded as I closed it and put it back on the classroom shelf. "There's always tomorrow," she said. I nodded, picked up my backpack, said goodbye, and made my way down the empty staircase towards the side door where small crowds of kids waited for their parents to pick them up. The buses were loaded and driving away, with the shouting of the students inside echoing behind them. I squeezed my way through the clumps of parents and aunts and uncles up to the corner where the crossing guard ruled with her white gloves and whistle. She waved me on, and I made my way up the small hill, which felt like a mountain on days like today. I passed the yellow house, the green house, and the blue house, while cars full of families drove past me up the street. Every day, while they made their way home, I made my way to the library, where I spent the afternoons. Once I could see the paw print shape of the red leaves on the trees, I knew I was close to the path. I closed my eyes and counted 87 steps, opened my eyes, and the front doors of the library swung open. I waved as I passed the librarians and the staff behind the circulation desk. I cast a wistful glance at the thousands of books in the adult section that I was planning on reading every single one of, then made my way to the children's room at the back. I sat down on one of the beanbag chairs and looked around for the nearest book. I was within arm's reach of the new bookshelf, so I grabbed the closest one and examined it. It was about horses and medieval times. I'd loved Black Beauty, Misty of Chincoteague, and my friend Flicka. So I opened it up and dove right in. Medieval times were kind of interesting, but the story was a little dull, so I read it quickly, skimming it for interesting facts. I learned that a farrier is someone who takes care of horses' feet. Once I made it to the end, I slammed the book shut like I was spiking a ball. Another book down. I was about to pick up another one when Ms. Derrida passed by and said hello. Ms. Derrida wore cat-eye glasses and cardigan sweaters over blouses with Peter Pan collars. Her gray hair was short, like a flapper from the 1920s, and she wore a different color of lipstick every day. She had worked at this branch of the library for longer than anyone. Adults were always turning up to talk to her about when they were children in the library. She seemed to know everything about everything. "Is my dad here?" I asked her. "I don't think so," she said. "I'm pretty sure I saw the bookmobile leave about an hour ago. Is your mom picking you up later?" "No," I said. "She's on a trip to Ecuador for her job." "Ah," said Miss Derrida, "then I expect your dad will make sure to be back by 5 today." "Yeah," I said, and picked up the next book. It was a book about trains that I'd read a few days ago, so I put it back and was searching for another one when I noticed Jalissa coming toward me. She vaulted across the room and sprawled across the beanbag chair next to me. "Hey, Leandra," she said. "What's up?" "Not much," I said. "You want to play?" "Maybe," I said. "I mean, I did want to play, but I also really wanted to read. The other kids are outside. You want to come out?" I didn't really. But my parents were always suggesting I go outside, and I knew later I might be wishing I had someone to play with. So I left behind the books and followed Jalissa out the front doors and around to the back of the library. She was older than me, like most of the kids who hung out at the library after school, and she wore a sweatshirt every day, no matter what. There was a narrow stretch of grass and trees between a tall brick wall and the library's outside wall. It was a spot the grown-ups never thought about, but it was our usual place to play. When we arrived, Becky was pouring water into a bucket she'd found. Becky was into horses, and she rode them and mucked out their stables, so she didn't mind getting dirty. "Would you like some mud soup?" she asked. It was a brown, gloppy mess, full of pebbles and sticks. I pretended to taste it. "Mmm," I said, "delicious." "No," said Becky sternly. "Really eat it. Don't pretend." Becky seemed to enjoy making me uncomfortable. She loved to make me do things I did not want to do. Sometimes I gave in because it was easier than arguing with her, but this time I thought quickly. "It needs something," I said, and bent down to pick some of the red berries that grew along the wall. "Ooh," said Becky, "throw them in." Demetrius sat on a stump nearby, watching the soup creation. Demetrius was a big baseball fan. As soon as he got out of school, he'd put on his baseball cap and wouldn't take it off until school the next day. He said he slept in it, too. "Where's my soup?" he demanded, bringing his fist down onto his thigh, pretending to be the king of our library kingdom. We'd invented librarydom during the summer, and Demetrius had declared himself king. I was usually the court jester or the royal librarian, and Becky liked to play the royal chef. "It's coming, Your Majesty," said Becky, picking up the bucket and bringing it toward him. Thankfully, it looked like today would not be the day I'd have to eat mud. Svetlana was leaning on the wall next to Demetrius, winding her long blonde hair around her index finger. She usually played the queen in the librarydom games, but she really only ever talked about what kind of gown the queen would wear. She wouldn't even let us make her a leaf crown. "I hate pretend games," she said. "Can't we do something fun. Svetlana was so ready to be a teenager. She was always checking herself out in mirrors or windows or reflective sheets of metal. I don't know what she thought her hair was going to do when she wasn't looking at it, but it clearly demanded her attention every other minute. I said, "I know where there are cherries. I'll go get them for everyone." Svetlana rolled her eyes, but Jalissa looked excited, so I ran around the corner and across the parking lot to the cherry trees. I picked as many as I could carry, then ran back to the group. As I arrived, all the kids rushed out of our secret nook at once, racing out and across the parking lot. They ran by me so fast they almost knocked me down. I sat down on the curb and watched them run to the opposite end of the parking lot. Jalissa ran back toward me and shouted, "Come on, Leander, we're going to play tag." "That's okay," I said, and ate a cherry. It made my eyes water. It was so sour. "What, are you scared?" shouted Demetrius as he sped by. "No," I said, "I'm eating cherries." But he was already gone. When Svetlana ran past, she stuck out her tongue. I was starting to feel very anxious. First, it was the mud, then the almost running me over, then the teasing, then the tongue. I just wished I were back on the beanbag chair upstairs. Maybe I'd never leave the children's room again. Then suddenly, a pine cone came flying at me and hit me right above the eye. I looked up and saw Becky standing there, laughing. Then she put her hand to her mouth and dramatically said, "Oops." I immediately started to cry, but I didn't want anyone to see, so I just got up, my arms still full of cherries, and ran back into the library. I went straight into the back corner of the children's room, right behind the shelves that were for reshelving. There was a cart there that I could just about fit onto the bottom shelf of, so I climbed onto it and hung my jacket across the front so no one could find me. I heard them all come into the library. They never paid attention to the rule about being quiet in a library, so I could hear them at the front door and then come in to the children's room. They were fake whispering, pretending to tell each other to be quiet, laughing, knocking over books. They called out, "Leandra!" But I stayed right where I was and tried not to breathe too loudly. Finally, they gave up and went back outside. I came out and looked at the clock. It was 4:15. I grabbed my backpack, put the cherries in my pencil case, and wondered how to spend the next 45 minutes until my dad would be done with work and ready to take me home. I thought about drawing with the craft supplies or playing with the stuffed animals. But if any of the other kids got cold out there, they'd come back in, and I didn't want to see any of them ever again. Because my dad worked here, I knew the library better than anyone, so there were plenty of places I could go where the other kids would never find me. There wasn't just the upstairs with the shelves of books and checkout desks and reference desks and a staff room for the librarians. There was also the downstairs, where there were offices, a conference room, a giant meeting room that we sometimes watched movies in, and a storeroom for the book sale that the library held a few times a year. The garage for the bookmobile was next door to the storeroom, so my dad often moved books to the bookmobile from there. There were times when the library was closed that we went through the whole library, me and my dad, looking at all the books, making sure everything's okay, as my dad would say. He'd repair the broken ones in the storeroom. "Are you a librarian?" I'd asked him once. "I'm a caretaker of books," he said. I technically wasn't supposed to go downstairs. I'd been scolded before by several of the staff members about roaming around down there, but I felt safer in that storeroom than anywhere else in the library, so I sneaked past the circulation desk and pushed open the door that led downstairs when no one was looking. In the storeroom, I ran into Mr. Rodriguez, who was picking up a book that had recently been repaired. Mr. Rodriguez was the reference librarian. He wore colorful ties and shiny shoes. He sat at a desk in the adult section most of the time, answering grown-ups' questions. He had thick, dark hair that he ran his hands through when he thought about things.
"You're not supposed to be down here, are you?" he asked, stroking his beard.
"No," I said, looking at the floor, trying not to cry again. I was really worried about getting into trouble. He looked at me carefully and said,
"You need a quiet place to read. Is that it, Leandra?"
I nodded.
"You won't touch anything you're not supposed to?"
I shook my head.
"I bet your dad will be back very soon, too, won't he?"
I nodded again.
"Well, I didn't see you down here, but if I did, I imagine I might find you reading in that comfortable old chair over there, wouldn't I?"
I nodded with more enthusiasm.
"And I think I saw some good fairy tales over there and several novels I'd recommend over on that shelf there," he said. "Not that you'd be reading down here or anything."
I shook my head and smiled.
"Good," he said. "Well, it was nice not seeing you."
He headed upstairs with his book. The pea green chair was a cozy one. It used to be upstairs in the children's room until it got a stain on it that they couldn't remove, so they brought it down here. It had always been a good reading spot for me, so I curled up in it with the novel I'd pulled off the shelf that Mr. Rodriguez had recommended. I'd read several chapters when I heard the sound of the garage door opening, which was the first sign that the bookmobile had returned with my dad. I put the book on the table next to the chair and went to watch the big blue bus roll into the garage. My dad hopped out and gave me a big hug.
"What are you doing down here?" he asked. "Did all the other kids go home?"
I shrugged. I didn't really want to talk about those other kids, especially now that the book had sort of helped me forget about them for a while.
"Well, it's a nice surprise to get a welcome from my favorite girl. I'm just going to make sure this stack of books gets into the right place and then we can go home. Sound good?"
I nodded and went to get my backpack. The next day, when the bell rang to release us from school, I hid in the coat closet for a few minutes. I thought if I got to the library a little later than usual, I might be able to avoid any of the other kids who might be turning up there. When Ms. Nima came in and found me by the art smocks, I told her I was looking for my jacket. She laughed and said, "You're wearing it, silly. It's time to go home." I moved slowly enough that I missed the crush of parents and cars that usually ringed the school. I also missed the crowd that usually made the crossing together. The crossing guard was still there, though, and waved me up the street with her gloved hand and a curious tilt of her head. I passed the yellow house, the green house, and the blue one. I was glad that the dog didn't bark at me like it did last week. I arrived at the library with some sense of relief and pushed open the front doors. I tried to avoid the circulation desk this time. I just headed straight down the stairs to get back to my book in the comfy chair in the storeroom. All day, I'd been looking forward to reading the next chapter in the comfy pea-green chair. I collapsed into the comforting, well-worn corduroy seat and rested my head against the side for a moment, relieved. I'd made it here without running into anyone. I reached for the novel on the table where I'd left it, but it wasn't there. I thought maybe one of the librarians had reshelved it. Maybe it was on the shelf where I found it. I walked over to the shelf, and it was empty. Then I noticed the entire bookcase was cleared. There were no books on it at all, just little balls of dust and a few stray pieces of paper. I was disappointed. I thought about that book all day at school. Maybe there was another copy upstairs. I looked around the storeroom, and I noticed that all of those bookcases were empty too. How did they clear out so many books in a day? A project like that should take weeks, I would have thought. I walked to the garage to see if my dad might be around, but the bookmobile was out, so he must have been out delivering books. It was strange, too. All the piles of books that usually ringed the garage were also gone. It was all strangely quiet. Given that there was nothing to read down here anymore, I decided to go upstairs and ask the librarians or the ladies at the desk what was going on. It was quiet upstairs, and I quickly discovered that there was no one at the circulation desk. I turned to pay my respects to all the books in the adult section that I looked forward to reading one day and found, to my horror, that all of those books seemed to be gone as well. The shelves looked like a forest of ladders, not bookshelves. I ran over to them to investigate. Maybe the books were just hiding. But no, every single shelf was empty. I checked. This was very bad. I ran into the children's room, ready to get some answers about what had happened from Ms. Derrida, the children's librarian, but no one was at the desk. I looked around and discovered the shelves in the children's room were empty too. Every single book in the entire library was gone. This was a disaster. And no one seemed to be around. Were they all in the staff room trying to find the books? I wasn't supposed to go back there by myself, but this was an emergency, so I knocked and went in. It was empty. There were no books on anyone's desks, and there wasn't a single librarian back there. I called out. I was nervous about making such a big noise in a library, but this was turning into a real emergency. The library was missing not only its books, but also all of its librarians. There it is, the new chapter one. If you listened before, did you notice what the changes were? If you want to guess, stop the podcast because I'm about to tell you. And you can guess and then you can find out if you're right. But, so, here's what I did. I combined chapter one and chapter two into one big chapter. And I changed the beginning of the book just to give us a little hint that the world is going to get fantastical later. Because the first chapter, up until the very end of it, is pretty realistic. And what I was realizing was maybe challenging for some listeners, readers, was not knowing that we were going to go to a world of fantasy. And maybe it would be useful to just have a hint of that at the beginning and then go ahead and have that first chapter finish with a kind of fantastical event. As it was before, it was like, it was a little bit like in The Wizard of Oz, like if she never saw the wizard. What does she do? She sees, like, the guy who's the wizard later, but he tells her fortune, and it's a little bit like, ooh, you know, like a little something is going to happen. So I felt like I needed to include just, like, a little element of possibility at the very beginning, even though it's in a book, and then finish up with the major event of the books going missing. So that is what happened. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, first of all, welcome. Thank you so much for still being here at the end. And I would recommend actually for you to continue on to chapter three. So you'll see that there's a chapter two in the podcast feed. But you've basically just listened to it because it is now folded into chapter one. So go ahead and skip to chapter three if you are going to continue listening to the book. It'll be much further down the feed because it was an earlier recording. But that's where to go from here if you'd like to know what happens next. And the numbers, if you're continuing from here, are going to be pretty much one off all the way. So my hope is that will not be too irritating for you, but just imagine, you know, a number behind if you're listening, if you care about such things. So, as ever, I would love your thoughts, responses, ideas, curiosities. The place to send those, you can leave me a voicemail message at 646-847-8758 or you can write me an email at leandralibrary@gmail.com. That is leandralibrary@gmail.com. If you would like to see some emoji summaries of the chapters, you can go to the website, which is emilyrainbowdavis.com/readingthelibrarybook. And if you like the podcast and you'd like to support me, the place to do that would be on Patreon. And I have a new Patreon that it will especially speak to folks who listen to the podcast. And that is it's patreon.com/EmilyRainbowDavis. So if you'd like to throw in some support, that is a good place to do it. Or on Ko-fi. Coffee, K-O-F-I. I'm there also as Emily Rainbow Davis. So thank you for listening and for your feedback and your thoughts and your experience of listening and reading. I appreciate it a lot. So I may update further chapters as I go along if I get inspired or get some feedback that I want to fold into what's here. But otherwise, it might be a while before you hear from me again. Since there's a finite number of chapters in the book, there's not much more to be said. Although, you never know. I will keep you updated if there's any news. And if I get any sort of recordings from you, my lovely listeners, I will put those up here as well. So those are possibilities. But if I don't see you in a little while, thank you so much for your attention and for your listening. And if you like the podcast, tell your friends. Selim, everybody.